the comic book medium itself is special. And what we can add to the comic book, we may have to think about that.
Hello, fellow humans, and welcome again to Very Fine Comic-Centric Podcast from the Court of Nerds. Want to discuss a couple things today that really jumped out at me. I was kind of excited to see this stuff. First up, on the heels of news that a Quantum and Woody television show is in the works, it seems as though Valiant is going to be bringing Quantum and Woody back. And that's super exciting, especially because they're going to be using 90s-style foil covers. And there's a really cool article on Entertainment Weekly focusing on this, where they interview Daniel Kibblesmith, who is going to be writing the book, and Valiant CEO Dinesh Shamdasani. And they're going to be talking, they talked about how they wanted to redo this Quantum and Woody, how they wanted to it to take place in the future from where it left off, where the two brothers are like coping with their powers and the aftermath of their adventures. I really like how this is being set up. Just the book in general, not just the foil covers, which seems like it could be really fun, but the way Kibblesmith has presented how his stories are going to go. Apparently, now the brothers who just have had a falling out due to the fact that Quantum, Eric, the older brother who's more superheroic, revealed to Woody that Woody's biological father is still alive. And they had a falling out over that, and one of the things these brothers have to do every 24 hours is connect these metallic armbands so they don't evaporate into electronic particles and stuff like that. And at this point in their relationship, Kibblesmith has said that once a day, the two brothers have to get together, and very seldom do they talk or display any emotion outside of frustration, that they have to come together, clang their bracelets, and then depart. The way he presents his vision of this is humorous, and it deals with familial struggles, and I'm really excited for how this is going to come about. In the article, Kibblesmith is also just absolutely hysterical, and I've always liked when the writers in their articles are very engaging and very funny. Looking no further than Jeff Loveness with his work on Nova and World Reader at Aftershock. He's a great interview, really funny, really self-deprecating, and Kibblesmith kind of hits me in that same fashion, where I can see him being really good on a book like this. So that's pretty exciting. Oh, and Kibblesmith is also a veteran of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, so you know he's got some pretty good comedic writing chops going. Dinesh Shamdasani, the CEO of Valiant, he was talking about how actually difficult it was to find the same kind of foil stuff that they used in the 90s that they're going to be using to make this these covers. So with an actual backstory behind it, I think I'm down with these 90s-style foil covers to celebrate this book that debuted way into the 90s under Christopher Priest. And it's exciting. Like, big ups to Valiant. They're doing a lot of fun things right now. I'd recommend getting their books. I know last time I pimped War Mother by Fred Van Lente, so definitely keep an eye out for Quantum and Woody with them sweet-ass 90s-style foil covers coming up. Speaking of Christopher Priest, I audibly gasped when I read this. Apparently, Christopher Priest and Pete Woods, the artist from Action Comics and Robin, will be taking over Justice League from Brian Hitch with issue number 34. And my gosh, this is a long time coming. First off, for Christopher Priest, who is an incredible writer, and who is, it seems like, has finally gotten the praise worthy of his talents for his work on Deathstroke. His Deathstroke series I've been down with since the beginning, and it's very taut, very tense. It's really well thought out, and sometimes you have to read a couple of the books all in one sitting to connect things and just make sure you didn't miss anything because it's so smart and so well done. And I'm extremely excited to see Priest in a setting like this working with the best that DC has to offer. A case can be made that he is the best writer going for DC right now. I mean, yeah, some will say Tom King, and no disrespect at all to Tom. He's a fantastic writer. His stories are very engaging, but there's something about the layers with which Christopher Priest is spinning his stories recently that's just so captivating. And I look back on some of Pete Wood's artwork, and he's got this really, I don't know how else to say that, but kind of like a comic book, fun, superhero style that kind of reminds me of Carmen Giadomenico for Flash right now. And it's really engaging. And what's really exciting about this run is it's going to premiere with a story focused on a mistake by Batman leaves the League in a lot of trouble. And I love the fact that his first order of action is showing that Batman is fallible. And it's actually, he says, it's because a sleep-deprived Batman made a mistake. And I love that, because the rest of the League are people with godlike powers, and he's just a man. And he has these man's hang-ups, like just being sleep-deprived because he works all hours of the night. On one hand, I'm super glad that this is happening, because that creative team definitely needs a big primetime book. And on the other hand, I'm really glad that Brian Hitch is going to be done with Justice League. He is one of the best epic widescreen artists that comics has seen possibly ever. His work with Mark Millar has always been very engaging and very powerful and just so captivating for audiences. But his writing style is just kind of bland, and it's not imaginative, I want to say. I really don't want to come off as slighting him because he's such a good artist, but as we found out through the 90s, a lot of good artists don't make good writers, and unfortunately, it kind of seems like Hitch is falling into that category. He uses a lot of tropish stuff, and while he has good ideas, the execution just isn't always there. So this is definitely going to be a couple ticks up getting Priest on there. Another thing I really wanted to discuss was something I think John's going to be super excited about. I don't know if he was aware of this, but IDW Publishing and Marvel Comics have had an agreement where IDW was able to publish old printings of the Marvel Star Wars comics and newspaper strips, which is really cool because you'd think this is a comic property that's basically keeping Marvel afloat at this point in time because it's always one of the top sellers. But IDW and Marvel are furthering their partnership, and IDW is going to be putting out a comic book about Star Wars for readers around the 7 to 8, 10 age group. And it's called Star Wars Adventures, and it looks like it's going to be starring, like, Rey and Finn, and has, on this cover at least, it has, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda and Han Solo and Luke Skywalker, and it looks like they're going to be taking new stuff and old stuff, and it's for younger readers. And this is such a brilliant idea, because kids are always looking for good books. I'm a parent, I'm trying to find good books for my kids, and although there's a lot of books that are just visually beautiful, there's not that many quality books for kids 10 and under. I know when I was growing up, I read a lot of comic books geared for teenagers, and that's kind of what the teenagers, young adults, 20s demographic is what it seems to be now. And having a Star Wars book that isn't as heady and intense as something like Jason Aaron or Kieran Gillen is coming out with, I think is a great idea. And the artwork is so much fun. It reminds me of like those Marvel Adventures books that would come out featuring an Avengers team that were very playful and very fun for kids. And this is, again, this is such a coup for IDW. They're publishing a Star Wars licensed comic book. They're already doing amazing things with DC, of all people. Like there's another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Batman book coming out. And the fact that they're able to juggle properties from the two biggest publishers for comics is just incredible. Way to go, IDW! That's very exciting. And don't forget, they've still got their regular Turtles book, which is, in my opinion, one of the best usage of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle properties I've ever seen. It's still incredible, and it's now the longest running Turtles book ever. So that's pretty cool. Lastly, I wanted to touch on something that, it's something I've wanted to talk about for a long time, but I keep forgetting. With all the Batman stuff going on right now, a new Turtles Batman book, all the Batman and DC metal, I wanted to discuss the time the Batman straight up tried to kill a dude. And it wasn't from the 50s, and it wasn't from the 40s when he once carried a pistol. This is from a story arc featuring the first KG Beast, and at the end of the book, I think it's a four-issue arc, and Batman tries to kill the KG Beast. In this story, it's fascinating. It's written so well and very tense where the KG Beast is sent to America to start killing political leaders, and how it's going about is there's a bunch of them all over the country, and there's some very high-ranking people in Gotham. And Batman has to stop this guy from assassinating these leaders. And this guy is not just a regular assassin from Russia. He is genetically altered. He's got cybernetic implants. He like doesn't stop until the job is done. He's a master of weapons and explosives. And he's basically someone that Batman is having trouble keeping up with. And I think that's fascinating. The best Batman villains are the ones where he is almost... he's not a threat to them in as much as they are a threat to him. In this series, written by Jim Starlin and art by the great Jim Aparo, it features Batman going after this Cagey Beast, and Cagey Beast has put him through the ringer. And at the end of the arc, Batman is playing cat and mouse with the Beast in the sewers of Gotham. And he's got the Beast following him and following him. And eventually, in this discarded back room in the depths of the sewer, he traps Cagey Beast in, and he begins to brick up the door. Like, not just putting bricks up that he can easily knock down. He's bricking up the fucking door to kill him. And he comes out of the sewer, and a Gotham detective is like, "Hey, Batman, where's the Beast?" Or something to that nature. "Where is the Beast coming back?" And Batman just glares at him. I think it was, "Is the Beast dead?" And Batman just kind of gives him a look. And the guy's like, oh, God. The way I read this was Batman had no intention of the Beast getting out. And I cannot recommend this issue enough, because there's very few times when the Batman tries to kill him or kills anybody. And it's freaked out. Our Batman's kind of freaked out because this is the dude that like cuts off his arm to get to escape a bat rope. It's, oh boy. It's crazy. He buries some dude alive. How crazy is that? So you can pick that up. It's 10 Nights of the Beast. I think it's Batman 419 or 420. It's relatively cheap. You can pick it up for about $10. But that's all I've got for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. And again, check out IDW Star Wars stuff. Check out DC and the upcoming Christopher Priest Peace Woods stuff. And again, give Valiant another look over and find this book where Batman straight up tries to murder a dude. Yeah, catch you later.